Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the NFL Roadshow following a crazy cutdown day that I did not see coming. Definitely thought there was at least a chance that New England would name Mac Jones the starter, but cut Cam? Nope, did not see that coming at all. And I've got a few thoughts about it, right? First, good for Mac Jones. He took so much crap in the build-up to the draft. Analysts who could not believe that he was the guy that San Francisco might have traded up for. I love this answer back for him, this clap back, this validation out of the gate. And while I think that Cam ultimately sealed his own fate on the two deep by blowing his testing stuff last week and missing practices that he couldn't afford to miss, don't forget what Jeff Howe said on this podcast last week. Mac has been good in camp. Remember, Jeff told us he tracked all of the throws. Well, according to his numbers, he beat Cam straight up, Mac did, a 69% completion percentage in team drills compared to 64% for Cam, a 74% completion percentage against the Patriots starting defense in practice compared to Cam's 65% completion percentage. He had a 75% completion percentage against the Eagles and Giants in their joint practices compared to Cam's 71%. And as Jeff told us last week, Mac finished strong and rarely throughout the process of training camp in the preseason made the same mistake twice. And we don't know, but I feel pretty strongly that Cam's vaccination stance and testing snafu last week probably didn't help his cause in a tight race. Not so much because Belichick cares about vaccines, though he very well might care about vaccines, but we all know he definitely cares about availability and building around players that he feels like he can count on to be available, right? That said, I only thought that that would affect his status as a starter or a backup, not his entire employment status. The fact that they outright cut Cam Newton and then proceeded to cut on the same day Brian Hoyer, on the same day that they placed Jared Stidham on the pup list to start the season, leaving literally, as I sit here recording this, with Mac Jones and only Mac Jones available to them at the position of quarterback, that feels aggressive and shocking. And while they're supposedly going to re-sign Hoyer, that's not really the point. The point about them releasing Cam is that it feels like they're also telling me what kind of team they have. I asked Jeff last week where they kind of fell on the Bears-Niners spectrum. Were they a contender that maybe needed to play it conservatively to protect their status as a contender? Or were they a team with a ceiling that didn't have anything to lose really from turning now to a rookie, which is where I feel the Bears fall on this spectrum? And would they sign up for whatever roller coaster comes with starting a rookie out of the gate and feel okay about that? Well, they not only went to the rookie, the Patriots, but they got rid of their next best option. If Mac blows out his knee in week one, they don't have a safety net that can carry them. And they did before they cut Cam. But I can understand that it might be awkward for Mac's development to have the presence of Cam in the quarterback room. He's got a big presence. So I get wanting to eliminate that, if that's anything that factored into this decision. But again, that's a choice to protect the development of your asset over the potential for short-term success as a team. They are taking the long view. And I think that's interesting. And I can't help but think that it also tells us what they think they have this year. Because again, if Belichick thinks he's got a team that can do some damage right now, I think he would protect their ability to do that in the event that one player went down. That said, they are starting the season with a pretty important man down, Stephon Gilmore, starting the year on the pup list, which means that the earliest that he could play in a game is week 7 against the Jets. Probably wouldn't be that week, though, I think, because he's not allowed to practice with the team until he is off the pup list, so he might need a little bit of time to reacclimate, get into game shape. Same for David Bakhtiari in Green Bay. Massive bummer that he's not back. One of the best, if not the best, left tackles in the entire league. But according to Albert Breer, they in Green Bay love Elgin Jenkins, who is going to play left tackle in the place of Bakhtiari. So we'll see if that ends up being a massive drop-off for them or not. Michael Thomas also starting on the pup list, just crushing his fantasy value on my Dynasty League roster. Luckily, wipe the dirt off my shoulder, also have Marquez Callaway on that team because his value now is pretty high. A mid-round draft pick in fantasy leagues. If you're drafting this week, maybe go get him in that range. He's got a lot of upside in that offense. It's been a rough week for the Saints, and it is unbelievable that we're watching them go through this again. Forced to evacuate New Orleans because of Hurricane Ida, now practicing in Dallas and expected to remain on the road, according to Sean Payton, for the first quarter of the season. As far as scheduled home games, that time frame would cost them two, week one against the Packers and week four against the Giants. I can't imagine that it won't make their lives terribly hard in a bunch of other ways too, trying to navigate family displacement issues, concern obviously about their city and neighbors, just an awful, awful situation. And I'm really bummed that they're going through all of that. Also bummed to hear about Malcolm Butler in Arizona. Don't know exactly what's going on there, but there are reports that the former Super Bowl star is thinking about retiring for personal reasons. Don't have a lot of information about that, and it's possible that the football ramifications are way down on the list of things that matter here, but there will be ramifications for that defense if he does in fact step aside, and that could be huge for that team since that D has to be better if that team is going to be better. They are one of the six teams I have on my not sure what to make of them this year list. And we continue with that series now with Cardinals reporter Bob McManaman from the Arizona Republic. Let's break the huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready? Three.
Hi, Bob. Appreciate you making time on a busy cutdown day to try and help me wrap my head around this Cardinals squad.
Yeah.
Vegas has them at 8.5 wins. The very definition of a middle of the pack team, right? So to me, it feels like there's a lot of potential on this team to put up more wins than that with Kyler Murray and maybe the best wide receiver in the entire NFL in D-Hop. Is there a sense there in Arizona that they might be better than people are expecting? Or do the 8-9 win projections feel like they go with what you're seeing on the field?
Yeah, it's hard to say because half the team seemed to miss training camp this year for undisclosed injuries or trips to the COVID list. And, you know, and J.J. Watt has 1 week, the last week of practice with the team. And D-Hop doesn't always practice, but he says, you know me, I'll be there on game day. And Kyler Murray's been out there working his butt off. I like what I see. I like on paper, Lindsay, to me, they look like a 10-win team. But this is one tough-ass division, man. You know, NFC West is so hard. But, I look at it, you got to do so much against those three teams in your division just to have a shot. And then you got to really take care of all those other games that are really going to matter. And I don't know if they have it in them. Maybe they are the fourth best team. But you know what? They could get hot. They got names on this roster that are enticing. And I get what you're saying. I don't know what to make of them either. I really don't.
I'm not alone. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I've been covering them since 88, since they moved here off and on, mostly on. And this team excites me and scares the hell out of me.
What scares you about them?
I think the coach scares me. I mean, I don't know what to make of Cliff. I think he's a fun guy. I don't know if he's NFL coach material, or is he still a coach, college guy? You know, I like what he's trying to do. It hasn't been done this way, the way he's doing it, really ever. It's nothing like we used to see in Philly for that one or two crazy year with Chip Kelly. It's different, but it's similar. He's got one of the most unique quarterbacks I've ever seen in my lifetime playing in Kyler Murray. And I just don't know that they signed a lot of old guys who used to be superstars who get mad if you say they're not, prove it. You know, I love Watt and AJ Green and Rodney Hudson. Those are huge names in this sport, right? If they stay healthy and Kyler takes another step and he's done it first 2 years, Cliff needs to take like two steps ahead of all of them, though, in my opinion.
What do you think that you still need to see from Cliff? I mean, outside of the wins, it felt like maybe some teams figured out some tendencies down the stretch last season, and he's going to need to coach around that this year. Do you feel like they have made the adjustments to come out of the gate and have that figured out so that the other defenses aren't just coming at them the exact same way they did at the end of the year?
No, they were saying it's these little things. It's something that Murray kept harping on all year, and Kingsbury finally came around. First, pre-snap penalties killed them, and that killed his play calling. You have designs on what you want to do, how you want to attack, and when in certain parts of the game. And you, when you're starting first and 15, it kind of kills your mojo, right? Not saying that he's a scripted coach player, maybe the first 15 games like a lot of guys want to, but he seemed to get lost in the moment. And I think, especially at the end of halves, at the end of games, and those are killer. When you give up a score and can't punch it in or get points, as everybody knows who loves this game, that's what kills you in the NFL, in college too, high school, hell, it doesn't matter, football. You got to score when you have your opportunities at those crucial moments. And they failed more than they succeeded far too many times. And the little things, they hope they've cleaned up in camp. But he said, still called it a work in progress when we wrapped up camp last week. You know, that part of camp, he said it was still a work in progress, but it was trending in the right direction. Trending isn't good enough for me. It's probably not good enough for Kyler Murray either.
Didn't get to play their preseason finale. Obviously, that's a disadvantage for some of the players that needed that showcase opportunity.
For the bubble guys.
Yeah. Is it a disadvantage for the team in any meaningful way moving forward?
No, I mean, I think it allowed some of these veteran guys who even they did miss time, a guy like Chandler Jones, who wasn't going to play regardless, and he's still got a contract situation, you know, hanging over their heads like a big black storm cloud. And hopefully those guys can come back, stay healthy, maybe it keeps them fresh. You know, I mean, if you're looking for diamonds out of the raindrops, maybe that's it. But I don't see any other advantage to it other than, okay, I got this guy still in COVID, my right guard. I don't know who we're going to start there yet. We think we do, but they haven't been able to practice. And got Chandler, you got Watt, you know, there's a lot of key problems that, and now, oh, forgot to tell you, I'm sure you know about it. Malcolm Butler might retire.
Do you understand what's going on there? Do you know anything about that?
Talk to Cliff Kingsbury on Tuesday about that after practice. He wouldn't tell us anything. He said nothing's official yet. Wait and see kind of a thing. And he kept saying he hasn't talked to Malcolm Butler, which I find troublesome.
What?
The head coach hasn't talked to a guy who, you know, the media has already reported is thinking about retiring or taking a sabbatical until he figures some stuff out. And God prayers with Malcolm Butler, yeah. who's a hard-ass football player and has a lot of pride. So something's got to be going on. But the fact that the coach hasn't talked to him is troublesome. The fact that the team had no idea what was going on as of 2 days ago is even more troublesome, in my opinion. And we didn't get any clarification on anything. Kingsbury said he loves the depth at the position, but take a look at it, folks. It's not that good.
Oh, I hope it's nothing too serious with him. I would imagine it kind of has to be, right, if you're talking about retiring at this point in a season. So hopefully everything is sorted out there and is okay pretty soon. From your football standpoint and the Cardinals perspective, if they did lose him, how does that potentially change things for them?
Well, I mean, he was going to be a starter, right? In one of the outside spots, it was probably going to be him and Byron Murphy, a third year guy, or maybe they want to keep Murphy in the slot because he excels there. Like a lot of corners don't. I mean, he embraces that role. He's on the field pretty much 95% of the time anyways, and they're 7 DB or however they shake out that D. And Alford is a guy that you can't help but root for after two freak training camp injuries cost him both the last 2 years, still hasn't played a down for this team in anything that counts. So you take that away, you're not sure how Murphy's going to do with a starting outside backer, even though he played it his rookie year because they had same kind of problems. You know, Patrick Peterson's gone. You bring in Malcolm Butler, okay, about same age, similar styles. And I actually like Malcolm Butler better because he's way more physical than Patrick ever wants to be. But then yesterday, Monday, they also had to place Darquise Dennard on IR, which ends his season because they did it before, you know, the final 53 were programmed out. So you can't bring him back. And he was a veteran. So they're relying on two rookies, a second-year guy, you know, and a wing and a prayer, quite frankly. I love Marco Wilson. He's a rookie out of Florida. You're going to see a lot of him. Mm-hmm. Kingsbury's Tuesday that this kid could start for him if he needs to. But if you're starting a fourth round rookie, no offense.
Yeah.
A cornerback in this league, in this division, hell, in this league, period. I think
this division. Yeah.
But he is a fantastic kid who's covered a lot of the best SEC receivers out of when he was at Florida. So, but this is not the SEC, as great as that conference is. This is still the NFL.
Well, and it could very well be that he rises to the challenge and he's good enough to play. But obviously, I guess the larger picture there is that's not the plan. That was not the plan that they wanted, you know, or else they would have taken him higher in the draft. JJ Watt, what are we expecting from him there? I know you said you haven't seen that much of him, so maybe you don't even know. Is he a situational guy at this point in his career? Is he going to be on the field all the time? What are we going to see?
He is maybe the most intriguing storyline to this team, in my opinion. I love what Murray and Hopkins could do together. I'm fascinated to learn what AJ Green still has left. And I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. But JJ Watt's this character, right? The larger than life personality, who is just a beast of a guy when you walk around him, and he just has his presence. Him and Chandler Jones, what they could do together, even though they play different positions. Watt's going to move up and down the line. Okay, he's going to line up inside, outside, at a defensive end, defensive tackle. He might even pop out like in an outside linebacker role as a true edge rusher. I doubt it happens a lot, but they're also going to watch his snaps. Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator, said, I mean, this guy played over 1,000 snaps most of the last, every year he's been healthy. That's just a ton. The guy's, you know, 32. And, you know, coming off some serious injuries, he seems to be healthy, but he ran a conditioning test and pulled his hammy and was out 3.5 weeks since he got here, so in camp. So you want to be careful with him, but you also want to unleash him, right?
Right.
And see what he can do with Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden and, you know, crazy Dennis Gardeck when he's healthy again, who had 7 sacks and like 50 snaps last year, which is crazy. I think they're going to be really wise with how they use JJ, but when he's out there, he's coming after the quarterback and he's going to knock passes down. If he doesn't get to you, he's going to disrupt passing lanes just because he is so good. It's really one of his best untold traits. I mean, everybody sees him. He will drive quarterbacks crazy, even if he doesn't get a single sack all year. And that's important.
Yeah.
You know, you knock down 12 balls. those are all potential killers, you know.
Yeah, you got to know where he is. So at the very least, he's in your head, you know.
They'll know where he is. Trust me, we know where he is because he scares the hell out of me just walking by me.
Is this defense going to be better, do you think?
I think the Malcolm Butler question is huge, and then you've got, if he doesn't play, it's a concern. It's a huge concern. But then you've got two young inside linebackers, right? And Zaven Collins, the rookie. And Isaiah Simmons, who's like a pretzel, and you could put him anywhere. But, you know, they're your two starting inside linebackers at the moment. They are using Simmons here, there, and everywhere, kind of what they did a little bit last year. But if Collins screws up, I'm not saying he will. He seems like a very smart, he's super athletic. You see him and Isaiah Simmons out there. I think Steve Keim, the GM, called him two huge-ass trees in the middle of our defense. And they are. They're 6'4", they're 260, and they can cover, and they run. I mean, Simmons runs like a 4.38 40.
Crazy.
And Collins can haul it from sideline to sideline, too. Simmons is so fast that, you know, they've used him at safety, and even as a cornerback, it's like a linebacker with speed. It's like, yeah. Lawrence Taylor on, you know, whatever. And I'm just saying that they're going to make mistakes, though. You know, they're going to screw up. But do you take them off the field? They're starters. You know, like normally you take a rookie off for a series or a couple plays and stick him back in there, tell him what he did wrong. This is the NFL. You don't got time for that. They want to win now, Lindsay. So yeah. Those two guys have to perform. You got to have your guys on the field. And the Malcolm Butler thing is troublesome as hell for me.
From an offensive standpoint, What are you expecting it to look like? Like, obviously, you know about the Kyler Murray and the DeAndre Hopkins connection. I think there are question marks with regards to Chase Edmonds and how much volume he's going to get. Is he the main guy now? Are they rotating between him and James Conner? Do you have any idea what that's going to look like?
Yeah, I do. It's going to be like a 1-2 punch. There'll be times where you see both those running backs in the backfield at the same time. And then you don't know who's going to run, right? Is it going to be Edmonds or Conner, or is it going to be Kyler Murray, who almost ran for 1,000 last year, right? So, you know, that's going to be hell for opposing defenses. But, you know, asked about that Tuesday, Kings, what his offense is, where it's come, where it's headed. He and his players have all said, you know, it's evolving. It's evolving because it hasn't taken shape yet. That's a problem. It hasn't gotten to where it needs to be yet. So it's good to evolve, but you got to get to a place that wins you ball games and that's a consistent part of who you are, what your identity is. They never really found that. When they did, it was bad because it was Murray using his legs far, far too much.
Mm-hmm. And then defenses just were like, we're going to take that away. That's clearly the thing.
And that's exactly what they did.
There were those strong statistics last year about success when he has X number of rushing yards versus fewer than that. There was a clear line in the sand. Like, you got to take that aspect of the game out because they can't win.
You have to have it as a threat that you pull out. When he sees something, there's going to be design moments where he's still going to do that. And there's nobody I've ever seen covering this league that can move as quickly, as freaky quick as he. I've seen guys who were fast, but I haven't seen a guy like Murray who was just like, what kind of speed was that? What just, you know, everybody who's watched him calls that out. It is a rare, rare ability. And the thing that a lot of people don't know about Kyler is he's got a very accurate and a very strong arm. I would never compare it to Pat Mahomes, a buddy of his, but I've seen him in practice. I've seen him throw the ball 70 yards on a dime. And they need to get more of that, Lindsay, because they didn't have nearly deep passing game that they had as a rookie in Kyler's first year. And you had Hopkins, but he was always lined up on the left side almost 100% of the time. And I think you got to move Hopkins left and right. You can't just have him be that reliable guy, you know, cross the body too. I think you got to move Hopkins around and make him like Davante Adams, because he's as good, in my opinion, as that other best receiver in the league. And Davante moves around, and Adams wants to move around. Hopkins should move around, especially now you've got A.J. Green and you've got a special weapon and that rookie Rondale Moore. You're going to see a ton of him this year.
Okay, questions about those two guys. Let's start with A.J. Green. Does he still have anything left in the tank? Because he dropped so many balls last year in Cincinnati. He was targeted like nuts, but he just wasn't catching anything.
He loved the stat we threw at him when we started going down that line of questioning. And he was reminded that he also, in addition to that, had the most percentage of uncatchable balls thrown his way in the entire NFL.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, there's that. So factor that, it kind of, to me, it X's it out. I know what that guy was and how good he was and how injuries can slow anybody down, especially a receiver when it's ankle and foot and hamstring issues. He said he pushed it too much, and I'm going to take his word for it. I mean, I've interviewed the guy before. I didn't get to know him really until this year. I think he's going to have a hell of a year. I'm not going to say he's not going to be an all pro, but I think he's going to be the number two guy who's going to get plenty of opportunities with Hopkins constantly drawing double team coverage. This guy is going to be left alone 1-on-1. He's 6'4". He's still got some burst and he's got great hands. Even though the catches he was thrown to, you know, he dropped. A lot of those were in traffic, which he's still pretty good at, just wasn't in the last couple of years.
Yeah, Rondale Moore. Tell me about him. How does he fit in?
He's going to be used in multiple spots. And a gadget, funny Tyreek Hill, you know, Sproles type of player. You're going to send him deep. He's going to line up inside mostly. He's going to take handoffs. I'm sure you're going to see direct snaps to him on occasion, which is crazy when you got that kind of 4.29 speed with Murray. We just talked about his crazy quickness. He's going to touch the ball as often as they can get it to him. And I think the packages for him are going to keep piling up as the weeks progress. I think he's taking over for Christian Kirk as the number three guy because he's so differently unique. This guy is so fun to watch, and the speed is, like Kyler, kind of off the charts.
That's exciting to hear.
It is, yeah.
Where does that leave Christian Kirk?
I talked to him on Tuesday, and he knows he's got a different frame of mind. He said, you know, I'm not going to be this reserve guy when I'm running routes. I'm running with a purpose. I've got a harder, tougher mental grind on me this year. It's a contract year for Christian, right? He's a local kid. There's pressure there because everybody who knows him from high school, where he won a few state championships, you know, when are you going to be a number one or a number two? You can't even be number three. He's feeling it. He said today, I've never had a year where I've been more ready, pumped. I got to have that mental edge. I got to go get it if I want it. He's not going to be a reserve guy. He's going to demand the ball probably when he can. I don't know how you do that over Hop and Green, but it's a good attitude. I like what I'm seeing. He's got to get tougher, meaner, even though he's not that type of person. He's got to have that attitude. He's got to be cocky. He's got to go want it. He's got to go prove it. He's got to take it more than anything. He's had injury problems. I think that part of him, he's over. You got to fight through injuries. You know, that's something that hurt AJ Green, according to him. But Kirk is young and he's got to fight through stuff. And if he really wants it, I think he's got the talent to get there, but it might not end up being here long-term. He may have to be a number two or number three somewhere else.
Last question, looking ahead to the playoff possibilities, right? So they have the lowest projected win total in the NFC West, but the NFC West, as everybody knows, is insane. So they could send all four teams to the postseason. Do you see a path to the playoffs for this team?
I do. They just have to be better than San Francisco, and they're going to have to sweep somebody in that division at least once and hope for splits. That's the only way they'll make it. They have to sweep one of those three teams. I don't think it's going to be Seattle. They play Seattle tough on the road very well. I think they are very well in danger of being swept by the Rams. So their only path to the play is beating San Francisco twice. I think they can do it. And I think that's what gets them in as the last wild card team ahead of San Francisco. But then who else makes it out of the NFC? I'm wrestling with, is it the Bears? Is it the Vikings?
Right.
You know, I don't know. Is San Francisco probably better than those two teams? I don't know that I like the quarterback situation as much as they seem to love it in San Fran. I don't know what they're going to do. I think it's a very possible chance that they could end up screwing that up and affecting Trey Lance for a long time. And then when they need to rely on Jimmy G, if they do have to go back to him at some point, then he's really not all that vested with you. That's why they have to be careful what you do with young quarterbacks. In Chicago, it's the same situation right now. I get everybody wants to go with a rookie like Arizona did with Murray, but that could end up backfiring on those guys their first year. So I see a path, but it's clouded with landmines for the Cardinals.
Bob, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Happy to do it.
Busted Open is your daily home for all things pro wrestling. Join Dave LaGreca, WWE Hall of Famers Bully Ray and Mark Henry, and hardcore wrestling legend Tommy Dreamer.
Dave LaGreca here. From WWE to AEW, Impact, New Japan, Ring of Honor, and more, we talk it all. Whether you grew up watching Ric Flair or Stone Cold Steve Austin, Busted Open is your place for pro wrestling.
Busted Open, Mondays through Saturdays at 9 a.m. East on Fight Nation, Sirius XM Channel 156.
And you can follow Bob on Twitter for more about the Cardinals. AZ Bobby Mack is his handle. Next up, we've got Ryan O'Halloran from the Denver Post. He's going to help me figure out what I'm looking at where the Broncos are concerned. Is it all up to the quarterback there this year? And why isn't that quarterback Justin Fields? We've got a lot to discuss, so let's get right to it. Ryan, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen you since we went karaokeing together in Beijing for the 2008 Olympics. Super random flashback moment.
Yeah, that's I'll probably be your only guest who checks that box this season.
Yeah, unless I have Lindsay Zarniak on at some
point.
That
would be the only one, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. So obviously, the Broncos are a very interesting team to me this year. Not totally sure what to make of them, but I think that that's because I'm not totally sure what to make of the quarterbacking situation. There are a lot of pieces there, and I assume that the defense is going to be pretty darn good. So I'm going to start with my questions that I have specifically about the quarterbacking position. They ended up naming Teddy the starter. I know it was a pretty tight back and forth all through training camp, and that a lot of Broncos fans feel very split on the two quarterbacks. Why ultimately did they go with Teddy and think he was the right guy for them?
Yeah, I think experience was the number one thing. And, you know, 59 starts for Teddy Bridgewater, 18 for Drew Locke. And, you know, it was actually Drew Locke who revealed that after the announcement was made, because he was asked, hey, did they give you any explanation? He cited experience. And I thought that was going to be Teddy's big advantage when this competition started. And you look at their schedule. First of all, the last two Septembers, they've started 0-4, 0-3. So they got to get out of the blocks a little bit better. And the schedule allows for that. At the Giants, at the Jags, home to the Jets. So I think in Vic Fangio's mind, he went the safe approach. Teddy threw some interceptions last year, but his MO throughout his career was he takes care of the football, he makes good decisions. Drew Locke's MO through 2 years is he's going to make a heck of a lot of big plays, but also some big mistakes. So I think that was the catalyst for that decision. But you're right, it was back and forth, and that was sort of surprising. And you know, and Vic Fangio says nobody really lost the job. Sometimes you say, oh, whatever, he's just taking care of his guys. But I do think that was the case, is that Teddy just was a little bit ahead of Drew.
How much do you think it was associated with risk assessment that you could attach to the fact that their defense is going to be pretty good, just don't come out and lose the game for us? And that's not something that Teddy is particularly known for doing, but Drew, we know, maybe is a little bit more risky.
Yeah. And it's almost like a profanity in the NFL, game manager.
Right.
Well, if you do it well, it's not. And I think that's what Vic is looking at those first couple of games. Hey, I'm calling the defense. I think we have an elite defense. It's fine to win 20-10. Teddy, take care of the football. Don't let them in the game. Make some third down and red zone throws. I think that was, if your risk assessment, I think going with Teddy is a much lesser risk than going with Drew. Although I think Drew will start games at some point this year.
Is there any weirdness in terms of the order of them? Sometimes if you have a veteran and a rookie or a younger one or something like that, you think about how it's easier to pull the veteran and go to the rookie as opposed to go back to that guy later. The fact that Drew was their guy and they're essentially lifting him out of the position and giving it to Teddy, does that create any weirdness if they want to turn to Drew later on?
I thought that at the beginning of camp, because the natural instinct would be if Teddy wins the job, it's probably because Drew Locke struggled and did not learn from his mistakes of the previous year. Then I think, okay, maybe you lost Drew mentally. But I think he did build some momentum in August to win. If they do have to turn to him, he'll be ready to go in. And one thing I like about Locke's mindset, he said this a couple of times throughout camp, is, hey, if I played better last year, it'd be my job. And yeah. Okay, that's the first step, is admit there was a problem. And I think his approach has been pretty steady in that. But I will say, when he got to the podium that day, when he lost the job, he was crushed. I mean, I felt for the guy, because he thought he did just about everything he could. But I think what he's got to take is a positive that he did make some corrections to his game. And then if he does get in the game, he's ready to go.
Specifically, what kinds of corrections did he make? How's he better now?
Well, I think the first part is, we'll really go in the weeds here, is they changed his footwork a little bit. So he looked like he threw more balance. But I think the biggest thing that fans will see if he plays is he's learning how to pick his battles. You know, he got hurt twice in his first 2 years trying to get out of the pocket, extend the play. He got hit and he got hurt. And then later on he threw interceptions. So I think a couple of plays he made in the preseason, he trusted his protection and he climbed the pocket, instead of saying, oh, I better get out of here and try and gain some yards. So sort of pocket maturity, if you will. I think that's where Drew made his biggest step.
How likely is it you think that we will see Drew this season? How strong is Teddy's hold on this job?
Well, we wrote about this in the Denver Post today, being Tuesday. I said minimum 3 games. Okay, if they're not 3-0 or 2-1, then you're going to start asking those questions, because that probably means they're not doing squat on offense again for the sixth straight year. So, my prediction before camp was that Teddy starts 11 games, Drew starts 6, because, Teddy's been hurt a couple of times. He's made it through a 16-game schedule maybe once. And let's face it, there's a reason why these guys were in a competition. They didn't do enough last year to have the job themselves. So, the tendency is, hey, they're probably going to struggle at some point.
So you think Teddy has the job for at least 3 games? If they start out 0-2, they don't turn. You think 3 games is?
Yeah, 0-2 would be interesting, because they start road game. So do you want to say, okay, let's give them a shot at home and try and save the season that way? Also, if you're 0-2 and you go to Drew Lock, you're putting a heck of a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
That maybe he'll start pressing a little bit. So, but if you don't score a touchdown in the first 2 games and lose the Giants and the Jaguars, then maybe desperate times call for desperate measures.
Yeah, they're very winnable games out of the gate, particularly with that defense. If they do, last question about the quarterbacks. Well, I think if they find themselves down by a lot in a game, could you see a scenario where they would bring Drew in to kind of gunsling their way back into it?
Yeah, and I've had that conversation with a couple of people as well. Is, do you sort of use him as the relief pitcher to give you a spark?
Yeah.
And if I'm Vic Fangio, I would consider, as long as you're prepared for what's going to come after the game. Hey, no matter what Drew does in that game, first question I'm going to ask, hey, is Drew your guy next week? Especially if they come back and win. So, they have defended Teddy's lack of willingness, I guess, to go downfield. He has a little bit of practice, but these really are two different quarterbacks. I mean, Pat Shurmur, the offensive coordinator, he's got a Teddy plan, and he's got a Drew plan. The Drew plan is vertical. The Teddy plan is horizontal.
That's why I thought it was interesting, because they are so different. And if you find yourself down, like the ADOT, do you know their ADOT off the top of your head, or even just the range? It's so different.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was apparent in practice where, Drew would start a period and he'd go, KJ Hamler, Jerry Jeudy, just run down the field as fast as you can. Like 50-yard touchdown. Teddy's more of the, hey, Noah Fant, run a 20-yard corner. So it's different ways of getting to the end zone. But where I'm interested to see Teddy, how he operates, is in the red zone, where you do need to be a little more calmer. You need to go through your 1, 2, and 3 reads. And, one of his pokes at the Carolina coaching staff was that they didn't practice red zone enough. So he's taken a couple opportunities this during training camp to say, I love how much we practice the red zone. So it's a stick in the needle a little bit. And we just all laugh.
So awkward. All right. So tell me about the wide receivers and how they're affected by all of this. You mentioned kind of Drew going downfield and Teddy may be more likely to use Noah Fant. Does Noah Fant have a bigger role in this offense now that Teddy's the quarterback?
Yeah, that's tough to tough to say until you get into a full game. Sometimes the narrative they're trying to create here is, well, Jerry Jeudy's more comfortable with Teddy Bridgewater. Well, Jerry Jeudy's going to be comfortable with any quarterback if he's not dropping it, which he hasn't been doing during camp. Cortland Sutton missed all last year at the ACL, but him and Drew really had a good connection at the end of 19. So where I think this offense can take great strides, if you have Cortland Sutton on one side, Jerry Jeudy on the outside. Jerry Jeudy had a chance to go against number 2 and 3 corners, whereas last year he faced the number 1 guy the whole season. That had an impact as a rookie. So then KJ Hamler out of the slot, Noah Fant can line up all over. So I think in the red zone, where Noah should have an impact, he's out right now with a leg injury. So we'll see about week 1. But I think it's going to be one of those years where if they're successful on offense, guys aren't going to have monster numbers because they got to spread the football around a little bit, and we haven't even gotten to the running back. So I think if they score a lot of touchdowns, I think we're pretty evenly distributed.
Well, let's get to the running backs. How's that going to look?
Well, I think Javonte Williams is going to lead the team in rushing. They held him out of the last preseason game, and Vic Fangio said after the game, we'd seen enough. Well, my cynical antenna went up a little bit and almost wanted to say, does that mean he's your starter against the Giants in week 1? I think they're going to start Melvin Gordon. I always go back and forth. Is the workhorse back better than the 1-1A guy? They're going to try the 1-1A route. Where Javonte, second round pick, where it helps him is he's pretty good on third down and protection and catching it. So he's going to have a role even if Melvin is running it a lot. But I think what you're going to see is gradually through the season, Javonte Williams start to take over that role, and that Melvin Gordon is in the last year of his contract.
How much is this defense going to, like, what are you anticipating? Is the defense going to have to carry the offense to a certain degree? Is this going to be a low scoring team? Low scoring games are the ones that they're going to win. What's your expectation?
Well, if you get Vic Fangio say, hey, you're going to win this one 17-10, he said, I'm getting on the bus, I'm going to take it. But yeah, that doesn't happen a lot in this league. So they are, you know, a couple of things on the defense is where new GM George Payton loaded up at corner, re-signed Justin Simmons, kept Von Miller. Is this defense can be great, but they got to get a chance to be great, which means they got to get more sacks and more takeaways, which they've struggled at. They got to start better in games, and they got to trust their offense to get a lead, give them some short fields. If this team has a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, I think they got a chance to win most of the time because they can be that good with Chubb and Miller at the edge and with their, you know, slew of corners that they've added.
How is Miller looking? Is he still Miller?
He looks good. You know, the Vaughn of 2 years ago had only 9 sacks, which was his lowest for a full season. So it's not like he was a 13 sack guy. Then he got hurt. I mean, he talked all last offseason, hey, I have to return to my previous form. And then he got sidetracked by the ankle. So where he should be encouraged is he played about 20 snaps the other night in the preseason game, tested that ankle. He came up feeling good. I think that was a breakthrough. And one thing he didn't want to do, he didn't want his first snap to be against the Giants. He wanted to get out there, take a test drive, much like Cortland Sutton. So I think for Miller, if he can get 10 to 12 sacks, and then you have Chubb maybe at 12 to 14, that means they're winning games if they can combine for 25.
How good's this team going to be? I mean, we won't know until they hit the field. I understand there's tons of question marks as far as putting it all together, but your expectation, is this going to be a competitive team?
It will be a competitive team, but that may not reflect in the win-loss. I have them in the 7 to 10, 8 and 9 range because I just think they're going to have trouble on offense being consistent. And there's still some young players there. There could be a quarterback carousel, and the defense cannot score touchdowns with regularity in this league. So, you know, every team, you know, most teams are going to get blown out when something goes wrong in a season, but this team needs a lot of things to go right health-wise, start of the season-wise, to get to that 9-8 where they're playing meaningful games after Thanksgiving.
It's a game of math at a certain point. Can you make me understand why they didn't draft Justin Fields?
Where's the GM? I want to talk to the GM.
Deep sigh.
You know, they traded for Teddy Bridgewater a night before the draft. I thought that meant they're going Justin Fields. Say, Teddy, start the season, hand it off to the kid, be the mentor, perfect match, and try and get something for Drew Lock or even hang on to him as a chip when the Aaron Rodgers things never really developed because he never became available. But, you know, you're sitting there at 9, you got Justin Fields there and Mac Jones there. Okay. Never thought Fields would have made it to 9. So we're like, you know, hey, here it is. This is Fields. And as soon as they turned that pick in, I tweeted out, the new GM's got some splaining to do.
Yeah.
But, and people took that the wrong way because they took that as a knock on Pat Surtain.
That's no, not, it has nothing to do with him.
Yeah, because Pat Surtain could be the best corner on this team by midseason. So they said, hey, you know, we felt he was the best defensive player. Carolina did them a huge favor taking J.C. Horn. But the bottom line was there just was not the consensus within the organization that Justin could be the guy long term. I would have liked to find out. And with George Payton, the GM's got a 6-year contract. To me, that means you get 2 kicks at the quarterback can. And I would have taken Justin Fields. If there's a corner that dropped later that night, I would have traded something, get back in the round one. So, I mean, a lot of Bronco fans are going to be keeping their eye on Chicago for when Justin Fields starts playing.
What about Mac? I mean, at the time I wasn't, because we heard so many people were so split on Mac that it made more sense to me that maybe they didn't like him, because I was hearing so many people that didn't. I think those people, well, who knows? We don't know if they'll look silly or not, but it sounds like, I mean, he's looked pretty good in the preseason. Were they at all considering Mac, or were they out on him?
it didn't seem like he was on their radar. It was going to be Fields. If Carolina would have taken Surtain at 8, I think the Broncos would have traded out at 9. So they would have passed on Fields there. I don't think Mac was on their radar. Although I should have been, because I mean, here's one guy who thinks Mac Jones is ready to play right now. He's got 6 rings, Bill Belichick. So, and I think this team of weapons at the skill position is better than New England at receiver and tight end. So that would have been a good fit. Yeah. So that would have been a good fit. And where the Broncos now are potentially painting themselves into a corner is let's say they're 6-11 this year. Well, you've played yourself out of range for the top guys. So now you're going to have to trade picks to move up or start to, you know, take another run at Aaron Rodgers, something like that. So, you know, I would, you know, my thing has always been take advantage of the fact that you're stuck and you're in the top 10, which you don't think you're going to be.
Right.
And, you know, and I told George Payton, the GM, this. I said, selfishly, Justin Fields would have been great for Denver Post Business, because he would have been great for podcast. He would have been good for clicks and subscriptions. So, and he got a kick out of it. He says, I see what you're saying, but I think Surtain's going to be a great player, but I think if Fields thrives,
right,
the temperature will be turned up on that decision.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, he could be the best cornerback in the entire league. And then the question still becomes how much of an impact the best cornerback in the league has on wins and losses and ability to, you know, make your franchise. That's a great piece if you already have all of the other great pieces, you know, to kind of put you over the top, but you don't build around that. Like Darrell Revis was outstanding. What happened to the Jets while he was there? Nothing.
Yeah. And that's like, if you're trailing in games and they're going to run it, which takes you out of the game. And so it's, you know, you have to be, you know, the comparisons to Jalen Ramsey are probably accurate. Well, here's the thing. You know, Jalen and Jacksonville had that great year in 2017 because they led a lot. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the Rams last year, made the playoffs. So, you know, corners are front running players. They do better when they have the lead.
All right. So, Ryan, win total taking the under, right?
Yes. What's the over under? Is it 8.5?
I don't even have it in front of me.
Okay. Well, I've seen 8.5 or 8. I would probably take the under on that because I think the AFC West, I think the Chargers can be better. This team hasn't beat the Chiefs in 5 years. So until further notice, that's 2 against the Chiefs. And they went 1-5 in the division last year. I think them and the Raiders are sort of fighting for third right now with the Chargers in second.
Ryan, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Lindsay. Take care now.
All right, just looked it up. 8.5 wins. Ryan was right. Same win total as the Steelers, Cardinals, and Washington football team are predicted to have, according to Vegas. So I guess that's under on the Broncos, according to Ryan. I personally would take the over on Washington. I am in on them this year. I think they're going to be good. Probably wouldn't bet the Cardinals, but if I had to, I'd go over, and I think I'm over on the Steelers also. I know a lot of you guys have fantasy drafts this week. I've done a ton of them so far. I've witnessed quite a few in my new role hosting Fantasy Dirt on the SiriusXM Fantasy channel. So a couple of quick tips before we go. If you want one of the top 3 tight ends, you're going to have to use a first or second round pick. And tight ends, you guys all know if you play fantasy, the drop-off is massive after 3. And then it's also big after 6. So if you don't go top 3 tight end, then the next tier is likely to be gone by round 6. So my advice, keep that in mind, because I personally think you're in fantasy no man's land after those 6 guys are gone. I'm getting one of those top 6 tight ends in every single one of my drafts. It's a priority for me. Tons of receivers you can get late, including pretty consistent guys. Like a Cole Beasley is going really late in drafts, despite the fact that he had 5 100-yard games last year in a great offense. There are also a lot of high upside guys that you can pick up later, like the one that Bob talked about in Arizona. How about the things he said about Rondale Moore? Love when you hear Tyreek Hill's name in talking about a rookie tight end, right? Like, that's a good comp. I want some shares of that. As for the quarterbacks, here's what I'm doing. I'm grabbing all my skill guys early and tight end, and I'm waiting on the quarterback. Starting to think about that in the 8th or 9th round, I'm taking the best available guy there.
And then backing him up in the 10th or 11th with Fields or Lance. So you're talking about, like, in this range, Stafford or Tannehill, some of those types of guys. I just picked up Dak Prescott because he fell pretty low in one of my drafts. But primarily you're looking at those guys like Stafford or Tannehill who are good, solid. You know, the ceiling's not particularly high, but they'll be okay for you. And then back them up again, like I said, in the 10th or the 11th with Fields or Lance because they have tons of upside. And that's where they're going. I think either one of them could be league winners for you. And the ADP is crazy low. And if you can't get them, then back up that mid-round quarterback with a guy like Fitzpatrick, who I am positive is going to outplay his ADP. And Jameis Winston, he's practically free. He's going undrafted in almost every draft that I've participated in. So stash him maybe with like your last pick because he's going to put up numbers. He just is. All right, that's the show for today. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. It helps other people find the show. Also, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app, free for most subscribers. Just download it today and tap podcasts. For video clips of the show and more, you can follow me on Twitter at Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram. My handle is LindsayRhodesNFL. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Andrew Emmer. Andy King is the director of sports podcasting for SiriusXM. And a special thanks to SiriusXM's senior vice president of sports programming and production, Steve Cohen. And we'll see you back here again next week.
SiriusXM Podcasts.